This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm super excited that you're joining us because I got one of my all-time favorites, a friend of the show. Of course, we're talking about New York Times bestselling author Donna Andrews. We're going to talk to Donna a little bit about her latest book, which is Rockin' Around the Chickadee. So always love the titles, always love the covers, so we'll delve in a little bit about that. And of course, we need to know what's going on because this is part of the Meg Langslow series, as you know it. So we need to find out what Meg and her cohorts are up to. So it's going to be a super exciting show, and everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is New York Times bestselling author and our good buddy and pal and favorite of the show. Of course, we're talking about Donna Andrews. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you. Good to see you and talk to you in the latest book, Rockin' Around the Chickadee, or the Meg Langslow Mystery Series. So tell us a little bit about this particular book and a little bit about what Meg is up to without giving away everything.
Oh, yeah. No spoilers. I'll try to avoid spoilers. One of the things that I try to do is take Meg into new fields, new areas. I like to figure out how to use what I'm interested in. And, you know, it's research. It's kind of like one of the reasons I made Meg a blacksmith is that now instead of being like, oh, Donna's going to the craft fair to spend money. Oh, no, Donna's doing research. So anytime I can use what I get interested in. And during the pandemic, for some reason, I became an addict of true crime podcasts.
Oh boy.
I started listening to all these true crime podcasts. It's not unrelated to mystery, but I got so into it, I thought, I've got to use this, you know? Meg is a crime solver. And it occurred to me that, I like to have, she's an amateur sleuth. I like to have a reason for her to sleuth, not just, oh, I'm a good sleuth. I can solve this and the police can't. I don't buy that. You know, if either of us found a dead body any place where we were, would we start sleuthing or would we call 911?
I would run.
Yeah. But it occurred to me. So normally I have Meg sleuthing because someone she loves is either suspected or in danger, or maybe she's in danger. I like, you know, a threat to a family or friend. But it occurred to me that if you're a true crime fan, there's another reason you might want to sleuth, and that's because there's a case you're really interested in that you want to see if you can help it be solved. And so I have that happen when in a previous book, her nephew, Kevin, it's kind of like having a sentient firewall in her basement. Any tech needs in the family, Kevin takes care of. Well, Kevin's got bit by the true crime bug and he's running a true crime podcast. And in a previous book, he gets her to help him solve three cold cases. Well, in this book, Meg's grandmother has looked around and said, you know, My son is the local medical examiner. One of my grandsons is a true crime podcaster. One of my, you know, they've got the local CSI in the family. They've got Meg's grandfather runs a DNA lab, and her best, you know, one of her good friends is the chief of police. We've got all the makings for a really good convention. It's called Presumed Innocent, and it's a convention that is, it's designed for people who think that a friend or family member has been unjustly convicted, or maybe they're just really interested in a true crime case. All the tools you need to help prove someone has been unjustly convicted, you will find here at Presumed Innocent. And they have a couple of actual exonerees, including one that I was very fond of because while in prison for decades for a crime he was now proven to have not committed, he got into training service dogs. So he's bringing his latest service dog trainee to the conference. And I remember during about only a couple of books into my series, someone said, you know, I can always tell that if someone mistreats an animal in your books, you're either going to kill him off or make him the killer.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't like to be quite that obvious, but, you know.
Yeah, just do's, right?
I think the fact that he's going around training service dogs, I think he might be one of the good guys, you know?
Yeah.
And it all takes place at the local fancy hotel, and Meg is, as usual, gets sucked in when one of the convention visitors gets offed. And he's the most obnoxious person. There's so many people who have a grudge against him that it's going to be hard to figure out who might do him in. And meanwhile, the chickadee part of the action, because we've always got to have a bird in the title. I was sure, how can we organize chickadees? And I remember my dad was an avid bird watcher. He didn't quite have a life list, but he carried a telescope in the trunk of his car. So if he saw an interesting bird in the distance, he could get out and study it.
Wow.
Mom said, you know, you throw a little seed on the feeder. And the chickadees and the cardinals are going to show up. She watches what shows up. And she was always particularly fond of the chickadees. So I decided, Meg's sister-in-law, a couple of books ago, her brother got married. And her sister-in-law is now like 8 9/10 months pregnant with a high-risk pregnancy. So she's kind of confined to the house. And one of the few things that keeps her from going stir-crazy is that they've got a bunch of bird feeders in the backyard. And she's gotten really into watching the birds. And she's like my mom, she's particularly fond of the chickadees. They're feisty and they will show up. No matter what, you know, what you put out there, the chickadees will come and eat it. I like that in a bird.
Yes.
Yeah. Occasionally my dad would get special feeders for special seeds that, you know, thistle seed feeder for a bird that only ate thistle seeds. And the birds that brush all the seed off the bird feeder, except for the sunflower seeds. Chickadees don't care from my observation and mom's observation. They'll eat what's there, so we like them. And of course, we're rocking around the chickadees for Christmas. And they're not birds for Christmas. It varies, but chickadees are one of the birds that stays around for the winter, so we like them.
Yeah, big fan of the birds, too. Yeah, every morning it's my daily routine to let the pups out in the backyard, and once I get them squared away, it's bird feeder time. And there's those ground feeders we have here, like towhees.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the thrashers that we have, the bigger birds, they like the ground cover.
Oh,
of
yeah.
course, they've got to get there fast because we have a couple of chipmunks out there that dash in and out to grab their mouthfuls. And
the furry gray wingless birds, as you call them.
That's it. But I tell you, not to go too far off topic, but you know, these little dudes running around everywhere, getting into my wife's garden, tearing up whatever, planting whatever in their pots, mysterious things grow up, et cetera, et cetera. All of a sudden this year, we've tried to grow sunflowers.
Yeah.
Love sunflowers, tracks the birds, great, you know, just beautiful. But we haven't had a whole lot of luck down here in the southeast. It, just the weather's too hot.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you know it, one of the pots that this little rascal buried his favorite sunflower seeds in has grown several sunflowers.
And the only ones you're able to grow, I bet.
Only ones we're able to grow. They're 6 foot tall, hanging there. So I think he finally got tired of us, you know, cursing him out. Like, darn you, tearing up everything. He's like, I'll leave him a couple sunflowers. Yeah, I'll give him a couple sunflowers. I like the chickadees too. They're always bopping around. Going, chick, chick, chick. Yeah, that's my best chickadee.
And I read someplace that the more DDDDs they put on the end of their call, the more excited they are about whatever they're calling about.
Oh,
chickadee, they're calm, but chickadee, dee, 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 dee. They're upset about something.
They're very nice.
I haven't
nice.
Had much chance to observe. It's one of the bits of research I did while working on the book. I love looking up weird facts and then finding a way to work them into the book, usually by grandfather insisting on sharing them. At one point, Meg, grandfather says something is a really interesting animal. And she doesn't want to ask. She said, I didn't need to ask why it was an interesting animal because I knew no power on earth would keep him from telling me. Grandfather's a good addition to the cast. So I love it.
So it sounds like everybody is there. The whole family's there. The whole cast is there and makes knee deep into it again. What, how does she do her balancing act as she usually does in solving the crimes, but also keeping everybody in line and at bay?
You know, well, luckily her grandmother is there, her grandmother Cordelia. And, you know, Meg comes from a long line of very, very intimidatingly smart and powerful women. Like, nobody messes with mother. And now that they've, you know, her father was abandoned in a library as an infant. And only during the course of the series do we meet grandfather and then grandmother Cordelia. Like, nobody messes with Cordelia. And Meg is not organizing this convention. She's just there helping. And when a murder happens, of course, that kind of gets delegated to her. But yeah, Meg is taking after her mother and her grandmother and learning a lot from them. I actually, in the book I just turned in, I actually had Meg, I just finished a book and I'm waiting for the copy edits that involves something called a Mutt March.
Mutt March. Mutt, okay, March.
Yep. I read about, there's a number of towns that have something like this. It's basically a fundraising and adoption awareness event.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah.
They have a parade through town. All the animals from the shelter march. And they, you know, if you fall in love with a dog, you can put in a hold on it. But of course, since it's my town, I have to go over the top. I don't know what other shelters have, but we've got nearly 400 dogs marching in this month march in costume. And, you know, one of my friends said if she'd read the first couple of Meg books, she might not have ever continued the series because she said, why does Meg let everybody dump on her all the time? She's always doing something. Meg is learning. She's actually recruited her mom to run the Mutt March, and she's only helping out. So Meg is getting smarter. She's helping Cordelia with the conference in Rockin' Around the Chickadee. She's helping with the Mutt March, but she's trying not to let them put her in charge of everything all the time. It's a struggle, but she's working on it.
I love that. And I love the fact that, you know, I've talked to you about this before, and I just love the fact that you know these characters. These are part of your fabric of life, as if they were sitting right next to you. You know, with Meg, I love the fact when I hear you talk about, you know, in the early days, you know, everybody dumped on her, and now she's getting a little bit wiser to things. And so this has happened over years. I mean, this is the
30th. Yeah,
this is the, what, 36th in this series?
36th book over nearly 25 years now.
Wow, that's amazing. Kudos.
I should say I'm kind of Peter Panning some of the characters, as they call it. There's Spike, the small evil dog, the small evil one. I'm sorry, it's completely unrealistic that Spike is still around after 25 years, but I'm not killing him off. We're not doing boring reality here.
No. It's like, you know, it's one of those television shows where everybody is in high school. They're all in their 20s, but we're saying they're in their teens.
And they've been
teens.
In high school for a decade. And
Exactly. And that works out. After, you know, when they start growing beards and stuff, that's, well, maybe. But, you know, we don't have to worry about that.
I don't think my readers want to see me knock off any of my characters, human or canine or whatever, you know.
No, because they'll call you on it. They'll call you on it.
Yeah.
And that was the amazing thing, you know, that you know these characters so intimately, and you also, you know, as an author, have to be aware that, okay, I have to know their history, because your fans will definitely call you on it if you kill somebody off or somebody disappears or, you know, something, you left something hanging, those type of things.
Every once in a while, a reader will call me on something that I got wrong. The biggest mistake I ever made, in the first book, Meg's brother, Rob, he's just graduated from law school. And he's studying for the bar exam. And at one point, I had Meg say that what a pity it was that he didn't bother to even take the bar exam, even though he managed to graduate from the not, you know, the difficult and not inexpensive University of Virginia Law School. And the readers called me on that because at a previous time, I had marveled that he actually passed the bar exam on the first time. And here I have two contradictory things that I actually managed to, they call it in fan fiction, they call it retconning, retroactively, okay. You know, what happened is that at one point, Rob comes up with something that's actually a decent bit of legal advice. He's not a practicing lawyer, he's a game inventor, but he comes up with something and makes us, that's a good idea. And he says, yeah, maybe you'll stop telling people I flunked the bar exam. And makes us, I didn't ever tell anyone you flunked it. I just told people since you knew it, the minute you graduated, you never wanted to practice as a lawyer, that you'd lie to us and told us you passed it so we'd stop nagging you about when you were taking it.
Nice.
At which point Rob says, oh, when you say it, it kind of almost sounds like a smart thing to do.
Good recovery. Good recovery.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I love it. All right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Come back and continue our conversation with Donna Andrews. Talk a little bit more about her book, Rocking Around the Chickadee. Also talk to her about writing in general. Always like to pick the brains of the master. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises as a method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with New York Times bestselling author Donna Andrews. Now, Donna, I always ask this question, but I always find it very relevant, at least in my mind, it's very relevant. And the fact that you have a series of books and there's expectations there. You've got to keep things in line and keep characters fresh, but yet keep them in place. But you have to have a mission and purpose. So yeah. I guess the question at the end of the day, when everybody picks up a copy of the book, Rocking Around the Chickadee, what do you hope they get from it? Is it more of just fun and excitement and knowing what Meg and the gang's up to? Or is there always some sort of a hidden tidbit in there?
There usually are, you know, if I'm gung-ho about something, there usually is some sort of hidden agenda. I use Meg's grandfather, for example, to grandfather's always got something about in the environment or animals, or, you know, he's a world famous environmentalist and naturalist, bird lover, animal lover. So grandfather usually has something to say. Sometimes he's a little over the top. Grandfather has been known to say, for example, that all of our problems here on the eastern seaboard with the deer, the white-tailed deer, would be solved with the introduction of a proper number of wolves into the ecosystem. Grandfather may be the only person who thinks this is a good idea, but he's really gung-ho on the idea. Grandfather is my spokesperson for stuff about the environment. And in this book, one of the things that came up, I have become really fascinated by the fact that I become fascinated by bad behavior in the true crime fan space. There are people who get a bee in their bonnet about something, and they will listen to no evidence. Either they think someone is guilty, 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 or they think someone is innocent, and no amount of evidence is going to convince them otherwise. And I've become fascinated with the phenomenon. There are people who didn't get a fair trial, but that doesn't mean they're innocent. It just means they could be guilty of sin and still get a bad trial. So the fact that they got a bad trial. One of the biggest examples, there's something called Brady violations, which one of my friends recently said, you know, you're really getting into this true crime legal stuff, aren't you? A Brady violation is when the prosecution doesn't share with the defense information that the defense could have used to help its case.
Okay.
So, for example, if the prosecution had three suspects and they think suspect A is their guy, but they never really prove, they can't prove that suspect B didn't get it. Suspect B doesn't have an alibi. If they don't tell the defense about that, it's a Brady violation. And it can result, you know, it's the prosecution's duty is to share everything that might be probative, anything that might be to the defense's advantage, or they can get the trial overturned. Stuff like that. But I got fascinated by this idea that just because someone is an exoneree, because their trial was found to be unfair, are they necessarily innocent? Or are they just someone who got a bad trial? A guilty guy who got off because they screwed up his trial. And I found this idea fascinating. Also, the idea that people get so passionate about crimes that have nothing to do with them. It's one thing if it's your friend or your relative, but there are people who spend enormous amounts of time, energy, and money following true crime cases that just happen to get to fascinate them. And, you know, I listen to true crime, but I have not yet made any missions to see any crime scenes or anything like that. I just like listening to true crime podcasts and getting ideas for books.
That's the key. That's the golden nugget there, I would say, because, you know, I've never listened to one. I will say that. I don't have any interest in that whatsoever, but I know it's extremely popular. But for you, how you could listen to that, of course, get enjoyment, get interest in it, but weave that into some of your, some of the mysteries.
It's an indulgence, but it's an indulgence. I mean, I have to have sort of like a couple of things that come together to make a book. One is that I have to have a crime and an interesting crime that Meg can add something to. I mean, most crimes an amateur sleuth cannot do anything about. So I normally try to put it in a situation where Meg feels inspired to solve the crime because something bad could happen if it's not solved fast enough. And she knows the police, they have to follow rules. They have procedures. So I need a crime that Meg can contribute something to. And then I need a way to get at least one, if not lots, of birds and other animals involved. And I need stuff for her family to do. So, yeah, and one of the things that's become dangerous, my cast of characters has grown over the years. Every time I do another book, someone in the family seems to come home with another animal. Meg now has five llamas, two barn cats. They're a bunch of dogs. I think they're half a dozen. Only four dogs that actually live there, but half a dozen other dogs that belong to deputies who work long shifts, and they drop the dogs off so they won't be lonely. I've got Meg's cousin, the CSI, training the Pomeranians to be scent dogs. You know, two of them have become search and rescue dogs. God knows how they do the rescuing. You need some humans along. But her cousin Horace, the CSI, Watson, his dog, he's a cadaver dog. He turns up his nose at finding anything other than cadavers. We always like it when Watson has nothing to do. If Watson starts alerting, we get worried. And you know, people keep coming home with more dogs, and now there are 400 dogs in Meg's backyard in the next book. Yeah, nobody, the only new dog on the scene in this book was the service dog that is allowed in the hotel because he's a service dog. So I look for family stuff, bird and animal stuff, and a crime that you know, we're not going to be solving too many drug cases because the books are on the cozy side. Preferably a crime. I also love a crime that has roots in the past, either of the characters or the town, you know, where you have to dig up the history of the town of Caerphilly, which actually is a fictitious town in Virginia. I invented it so I could have my way with it. I started off the first couple of books in my hometown of Yorktown, Virginia. And about the third or fourth time someone asked me, okay, which deputy in the sheriff's department is your deputy? And he wasn't a good guy. I decided taking him to a fictitious town would be a better thing, you know?
Yeah, probably good idea.
Once I get all those elements together, I can start writing a book. With Christmas books in particular, as soon as I've got a good title, because I can't really write the book until I know what birds are going to be featured. You know, if I come up with a plot that involves orioles and my publisher approves a title with cardinals, I have to go back to the drawing board. So I'm always very excited when I get a title approved. The one that comes out next year in the summer, I will only be saying this title when I'm sober, because I could really mess it up. It's For Duck's Sake.
Yes.
And when they're trying to dig a duck pond and they find a skeleton. And I just a few days ago got a Christmas title approved that I'm going to start writing any day now. It's going to be Five Golden Wings.
Ah, but means.
Yeah, I think we're going to have golden eagles as the golden wings.
Golden wings. That's nice.
Yeah.
So you come up with the title. That's very, very intriguing. I don't think I knew that about you. You come up with the title, they approve it, and then you sort of structure your book around that, making sure you have the three prongs. The one is the animals, the family, and the mystery.
Yeah, my editor really likes to have whatever bird is mentioned in the title. He really likes to have the birds involved, not just there as window dressing. So in the one that came out this summer, Between a Flock and a Hard Place,
right?
It was great. Any bird that flocks, I could use. I used feral turkeys. And I actually, near where I grew up, there was a neighborhood in Hampton, Virginia, that was afflicted with feral turkeys. Not wild turkeys, but domestic turkeys that have escaped from a turkey farm and managed to survive, regained some of their ability to fly, enough to flop up in the trees. That interviews this one poor woman. The turkeys were roosting in the trees, pine trees in her backyard, and she had toddlers. And every day, if her toddlers wanted to play on the swing set and the slide, she had to rinse them off, rinse the turkey poop off.
Oh, yes.
And she said, I gave up completely on the sandbox after a couple of days. You know, and it's, you know, people think, you invented that, didn't she? No. I read about it, and I thought, I remembered it, like, oh, let's add some feral turkeys to the plot. That'll be fun.
Nice, nice. I don't think I've ever seen or heard of feral turkeys, and I hope I don't. Wild turkeys, yes, and they're very territorial.
There are a growing number of neighborhoods that are afflicted with large, mostly turkeys and peacocks, but there actually is a place in the Appalachian where they have, a friend says, there's a couple of feral emus that are still managing to survive.
Wow. Wow.
There's nothing like driving along a mountain road near Blacksburg, Virginia, and seeing a feral emu rising out of the mist in front of you. I want to go see that.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting. Yeah, the peacocks, I'm very familiar with them. The area we live in, it's quite new growth. You know, a lot of old farmland was sold off, et cetera, et cetera. There's just less than a mile from the house. There's a stretch of road. There's probably six homes still on it, and they're holding out. They're holding out till, I don't know, somebody passes away or they get even more money, whatever it may be. And one of them has a small little farm of mixtures of all kinds of different animals, and she's got peacocks.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I can hear those peacocks. Now, it's usually like 3 a.m. when I'm letting the dogs out. I hear the peacocks. Quite interesting sound. If you don't know what they are and you don't know where they're at.
It sounds like small children are being tortured in the distance.
It really is.
They're excellent watch animals. I'm not sure whether they do all that much to guard your property, but they will let you know whenever anyone comes on the property.
Nice.
That loud screaming.
Oh, no. Thanks. Well, I'll be looking for those. Now I'm going to be looking. I always thought it was feral cats, and that's the only thing I had to worry about now.
Oh, yeah, feral peacocks, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, you're generally going to know if you've got feral turkeys in the area, because if you can imagine a turkey sitting in a tree, a bunch of them sitting in a tree, it's a sight to behold. It really is.
Turkey sitting in a tree.
They get a little skinnier than the kind that lands on our Thanksgiving table, but not quite as, I mean, wild turkeys are, you know, kind of lean and mean. They're pretty sleek.
Yes, they are.
Turkeys are kind of like a halfway between your butterball and your wild turkey. And there's nothing that keeps me happier than finding a small fact about some bird or animal that I can use that.
Little
I'm
going
to use that as the plot.
I love it. I love it. Well, Donna, tell us then a little bit about, are you going to be out and about anywhere, any place people can sneak up and see you and get some signatures, any events going on?
I'm doing a bunch of events in the Northern Virginia around Halloween. A couple of fellow authors and I are doing events at local bookstores. There's the One More Page in Falls Church and Scrawl in Reston. And there also our local chapter of Sisters in Crime has what we call our all author extravaganza. And we have it in Howard County, Maryland in November. And in Reston, Virginia, at libraries in December. So I'll be appearing in a couple of bookstores and a couple of libraries in November and December. The chapter extravaganzas, if you look at chessychapter.org, which is the website for our local Sisters in Crime chapter, it gives you the locations for the library events. And at least one of them is going to be a virtual event, meaning The authors will be there in person and there'll be an audience, but the library does have the capability that they will be Zooming it as well.
Oh, so okay.
That's a lot of fun. I believe it's the first Saturday in November. First Sunday in November.
Very good.
There's a couple of bookstores, Scrawl and One More Page and Mystery Loves Company in Maryland. They all do mail order, and I managed to get books signed for them every year.
Wonderful.
It's good.
So everybody get out and see Donna in action and learn from her. And if you can't, definitely go to, we'll get all the messages out there. Go online and get your book. I love the indie bookstore, so support
yes.
them as always. But everybody pick up a copy of the book. It's the latest in the Meg Langslow mystery series. It's the Christmas edition. It's Rocking Around the Chickadee.
Another one of those titles that you have to sing. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a music minor in college. You wouldn't know it. So, well, Donna, well, thanks for coming back on the show. Great to hear from you again. We'll definitely keep up with all your activities and look forward to having you back on.
Great. Thank you very much. And I will see you probably next year.
There you go. Love it. So we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas, or people you want to hear from on the show, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com. And we'll definitely answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. While you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows. It's a cornucopia of fun, barking, feathered, fin frenzy, PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.